My wife and I were just grinning like fools after 2017. That was her first eclipse. She'd never seen one. She said afterwards, she said, "You did not oversell that."
It took your breath for a minute.
Yeah, I was like, and then I was like, "Oh my God, this is really happening." And before I knew it, it was over. It was sad. This is crazy. This is so nuts.
I'm Letitia Ferrer.
And I'm Chris Alexander.
And this is Totality Talks, the Solar Eclipse Podcast.
It just took my breath away, the whole thing. It's really cool that you can see the corona and you see the sun kind of spewing out from behind the moon. It literally took our breath away.
A lot of people said overrated, but that was like one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Not overrated.
Welcome back to Totality Talks. In this episode, we switch gears and talk about eclipse poster art, commissioned by the National Park Service to create See America posters and promote the dark skies of our national parks. We have the Eclipse Event Poster Art Master and Dark Sky Ambassador, Tyler Nordgren. He's a former astronomy professor that gave up his teaching career for art. Hope you enjoy our chat with Tyler.
Okay, so I first met Tyler Nordgren when he was still working for the Park Service, I believe, back in 2014. And he had just did a whole series of posters for the Park After Dark. And we were at a solar eclipse conference. And I think you debuted your first total solar eclipse poster there.
That sounds about right.
Since then, he's done, how many was it again? 106?
104, maybe, plus or minus a few.
Okay, 104 total solar eclipse posters. And not only the 2017 eclipse now, but the interims in between for other countries, and then the 2024.
And there was they started with the 2012 annular eclipse out in the American Southwest. Oh. That was actually where I got my start, the eclipse posters.
I didn't know that.
And then there were, I don't know, a dozen or so for the 2023 annular eclipse last year. So, yeah, they're all over. And then there's the eclipses that we didn't get to see because of the pandemic. Like there was the annular in Tibet in 2020 and then the Argentina in December. So
actually Chris and I saw those. We risked our lives in the middle of COVID.
It turns out that actually that Tibet eclipse, it's a good thing I didn't go, because at the risk of making this a little bit of a downer, turns out as that annular eclipse was just starting, instead of being in Tibet, I was at home. I had a heart attack. Like, and instead of being at 14,000 feet in the middle of Tibet, I was literally on my couch, which happens to be a block and a half from the ambulance company. So, yeah, everything worked out great. So, I am still here thanks to not seeing that eclipse.
Yeah. Sometimes the universe works out for us, whether we like it or not.
The heavens aligned in my favor.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Well, I'm glad you're still here and you're still producing so much art.
And I'm glad I can be here with you.
So you want to start with some of your questions, Chris?
Well, yeah. Let's just tell us a little bit about your background and where you're from and a little bit of your career path.
So I'm a PhD astronomer. Got my PhD in dark matter here at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, and went on and did all those things a PhD astronomer is supposed to do. I was at Lowell Observatory, where I was a staff astronomer for a little while, and then went on and became a full professor, a full tenured professor at the University of Redlands in Southern California. And I think when we met in 2014, I had been on sabbatical with the National Park Service, and had been doing a lot of work with them, promoting dark skies. And so I'm former board of directors member for the International Dark Sky Association. But it was through that work that I began getting into artwork. and helping promote dark skies in national parks through creating the Half the Park is After Dark poster campaign. And then through that, through the work I was already doing with the parks, when it turned out in 2012, there was an annular eclipse going over a whole bunch of national parks out west, then those dark sky poster campaign turned into solar eclipse poster campaign. And now I guess we're on to career number three or something for me at this point. I started my own business, Space Art Travel Bureau, and have been working to promote dark skies, solar eclipse travel. I wrote a book, Sun, Moon, Earth, the history of solar eclipses from Omens of Doom to Einstein and exoplanets. So it's all about writing about, drawing about solar eclipses and astronomy, tourism, and just experiencing awe however you can out under a dark starry sky or a totally eclipsed sky.
Wow.
Well, I've been following you on Facebook, and you do go to some really cool places. So are you chasing both totals and annulars now when you can?
Definitely the total eclipses. I lead eclipse tours for a company, Betchart Expeditions, that does tours for the Planetary Society. And so annular eclipses and solar eclipses, yeah, is the bread and butter of really the business. I also do Northern Lights tours as well. So, yeah, that takes me from places like Alaska. Next spring, I'm actually going back to Antarctica in March in hopes of being able to see the Southern Lights from on board a ship with ocean-wide expeditions.
Ooh, nice. That is nice. My Antarctic tour turned out to be a little bit of a bummer, not just because we got clouded out, but because we could only land once out of the six times we were supposed to land because of the weather.
Oh, yeah. The weather was rough down there.
We were at Brown Bluff, and they went out that morning. It was a clear day, a little breezy. Mm-hmm. And then they had the Zodiac boats out there on the scouting mission. And we're like, all right, we're going to Brown Bluff. And they called it off. And so it was just a brutal trip.
We had not quite as bad an experience as that, but there were a number of landings that we were going to attempt that got called off. The best thing about that was we also went to South Georgia Island after the eclipse. And there, that helped me forget all about being totally clouded out. You're standing on a beach with like 250,000 penguins, and suddenly you totally forgot that there was an eclipse, which was the reason for the trip. So, but I'm looking forward to going back, and this time it's going to be around the equinox here in March, April. So we'll actually get some dark skies. And that's what I'm looking forward to, being able to see the southern constellations and hopefully the Southern Lights.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
We saw the southern constellations one night when we left through the Beaver Channel. That was it. And then it was twilight during the nighttime because the sun went down at about 11:30 and rose at 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the morning. And so it never got dark, but the darkest it got in 7 days was during the eclipse. So at least it got dark for 2 minutes.
And you can see my video of it on YouTube. It's of it just getting pitch black because of the clouds and everything. It got so dark.
Well, you know, after this eclipse here that we're having in 2024, the next eclipse that's going to touch the United States is actually going to be up in Alaska in 2033 in March. So there's an opportunity to see both totality and the aurora. Okay. And if you're really lucky, maybe you can see the aurora during totality.
Ooh, that would be good. That would be good. That would be good.
As if you needed anything to make totality even more spectacular.
I know. Well, I'm thinking that one might be a plane, though, because that march in
North Shore,
Alaska.
Yeah.
That one's probably going to be a plane.
It's way up
there. I actually grew up in Alaska. Huh. So, I love getting back up there whenever I can.
You still have family out there?
No, they all left after my younger brother graduated from high school. But I do still go back up there to see friends and lead some Northern Lights trips. And I was up there just this last February when it was minus 38 degrees.
That's when it snows, when it's clear skies out. They have the ice crystals.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Ice fog. You get ice fog. But oh, man, it's like breathing in. It's just like a punch to the chest.
Well, can you tell us about your first solar eclipse? And was it a total or a partial?
My first eclipse experience was a total solar eclipse in 1979 in Portland, Oregon. It went directly over my house, and I was 9 years old in fourth grade. I already knew I wanted to be an astronaut, so I loved everything about space. But the news media focused so heavily on don't stare at the sun, you'll go blind, that I thought there were special rays that came out of the sun during a total eclipse, and I hid in the house with the curtains drawn. I watched my first eclipse on TV. I photographed my first eclipse while photographing the TV screen. And all I remember is just how dark the house got. But it was almost exactly 20 years later in 1999 that I finally got to see an eclipse when I was a professional astronomer in Hungary. I was there for a conference in Budapest. And part of the conference event was that the day of the eclipse, they put us in buses, drove us down into totality. And I got to see it and it was like, that is what I missed 20 years ago. I can't believe it. I want to see more of these.
Awesome. Awesome. So 99.
Yeah. I think for a lot of folks, that was a lot of people's first solar eclipses, first eclipse. So, but I was a brand new young astronomer, didn't have a lot of money. So And at my second one that I saw wasn't until 2013. So I mean, it was really 14 years later. But that's also when I got connected with eclipse touring. And I was a speaker on a four-masted sailing ship sailing across the Atlantic Ocean. And totality was 43 seconds in the middle of the Atlantic on this three-week cruise. And it is still the most dramatic moment of my life.
And you got to see it. I got clouded out.
No.
Yes, oh. I got clouded out. That's one of my two cloud outs. That's my first cloud out was that 2013 one. And then the second cloud out was the Antarctica trip.
Oh.
So. But that was a very dramatic eclipse, wasn't it? Because 30 seconds, that moon is very tight around the sun. And you just see the prominences and the corona just jump right out.
Yeah, so we're on the sailing ship, and we'd had nothing but clear skies for days. And then the night before totality, storm clouds came on. So that day, it was mostly cloudy, but there were breaks and holes in the clouds. And fortunately, we were on a very maneuverable sailing ship. And so the captain got us into the right break in the clouds for exactly the 43 seconds we needed. But as a result, we were sailing all over the place. We were all taking off our glasses to look up to see where the clouds were, where the sun was. So my night vision was shot. I have zero memory of the corona from that eclipse because of just my eyes being dazzled. But I still remember this black hole in the sky and this perfect break in the clouds. And then suddenly it was over and the rain came on. And I'm standing there on the bow of the ship holding on to the rigging. And it just, you know, we tell folks, you know, when you go to, if you're going to take a trip, go see an eclipse, go someplace doing something you want to be doing. And the eclipse is just the cherry on top. And for me, that trip, that was just the embodiment of it all the way.
That sounds awesome. That sounds awesome. So that was your second one. Were you, was that, has it been everyone since then or still some breaks?
No, just stumps and breaks. I was a professor, a full professor at this time. So trying to get away from teaching was hard. I took off for like the 2015 eclipse in the Faroe Islands. That's the one where I got clouded out. But then, 15, 17, 19, 21. So at this point, I've been, actually, I guess at that point, yeah, it's pretty much been every one, almost. I guess the one I didn't make was, the one in 20 in Argentina. 20. And then there was the 2016 one in Indonesia. I didn't get to that one.
Okay.
So
And then you got to 23, didn't you? Didn't I see you?
No, I was not down there. And that the pandemic just messed everything up. When I was started getting back into leading tours, the first tour I left after the pandemic was the lunar eclipse in Hawaii in 2022, right? Okay. And promptly got COVID. That's where I first got COVID. Was on that trip. And it put me down for 3 months. It was 3 months before I was completely over all the symptoms. So, yeah, trying to figure out, all right, how do I get back into the routine of traveling, leading trips? It's been a slow process.
Okay.
So, okay. Yeah. But.
And then this one is going to be where?
This one, so because it's coming right by where I live in central New York, it's really the other end of the lake from me. I'm in Ithaca, New York, at the south end of Cayuga Lake. We're outside. It goes past the northern end of the lake. I'm working with New York State Parks. We're actually going to be up on Lake Ontario. So I've been working with the Rangers on what parks to open up early and where's the best chances of clear skies and maximum duration here in New York. And so for me, friends and family, the park's giving me a cottage up in Lake Ontario. So that's where I'm going to be.
Nice. Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And it was kind of my experience with 2017 as well. Again, it was out in Oregon where I still had friends and family. So once again, it was just me and a whole bunch of friends out on a mule ranch in eastern Oregon. So as long as we're going to have these two eclipses here in the U.S., those are the ones that I kind of just take for myself. And then I'll get back to leading tours starting in August of 26.
I'm doing it backwards because I'm actually putting myself out there. I'm hosting an event, the Cosmic Cowboy event in Hillsborough, Texas. I'm emceeing the day of the eclipse event items. I've been doing so much outreach locally, and it's almost gotten to be like a wedding where I kind of wish I had eloped.
I get that feeling. I was originally going to be in Dallas. I had been invited to be sort of the MC for the Dallas Arboretum. And I really wanted to, but then I thought, how on earth could I help promote the eclipse here in central New York, get everybody excited, and then like the week before just say, see ya, heading off to Texas.
Yeah.
So I decided, all right, it's coming to me. I'm going to stay here. And so I'll be the guy with the microphone up there on Lake Ontario in the park telling folks, all right, we're looking for first contact. Yeah. Everybody get ready. So it's
looking.
Yep. Yep. And you know, I'm going to have family. We're going to have a couple dozen good friends. And then, you know, however many thousands of brand new best friends am I going to have up there chatting with everybody and getting everybody excited.
I love the way you phrase that, because that's what I'm looking forward to, is having a whole bunch of new best friends who finally understand why I'm so crazy.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and that's one of the things. You talk to folks and everyone's like, oh yeah, I think I've seen a total solar eclipse. It wasn't that incredible. Well, no. In that case, no, you did not see a total solar eclipse.
You don't remember it. You don't remember what happened.
There was a great article that just came out by Jamie Carter that described that. It's like, if you think you saw one, you didn't see it.
Absolutely.
So you have any tips for first time observers?
Well, the number one tip is get into totality. Number two tip, get into a clear spot in totality. Number three, and this is a distant third. Yeah, do what you can to maximize that time in totality. But that's a distant third. And then number four, see your first eclipse, photograph your second one. Do not waste whatever seconds you've got underneath the corona trying to get why is my camera not focusing? How do I get this thing to track? Or do not spend it looking through a viewfinder or on a screen. You want that full 360-degree eyeball view of the event.
That's been my advice too, is not to be fiddling with the camera.
Yeah.
And it's still my advice because I'm usually the one that's not fiddling with the camera. That's why I usually take my husband with me, and he gets to do all that.
One of the things I wrote about in my book was there was the very first solar eclipse to be photographed with a camera and photographic plates was in, I think it was like 1860, 1862. This Warren De La Rue, who was funded by, I think it was the Royal Astronomical Society or the Royal Society of London, took his expedition down to Spain, loaded all of his equipment, dark rooms, chemicals, glass plates, got out to the site, set everything up, photographed the eclipse, and did it in such a way that he was able to prove for the first time that the corona and the prominences were associated with the sun and not the moon, and wrote this all up, got all sorts of fame for it. But in his write-up, he said, you know, if I ever get a chance to see another one of these, I hope to do it without any equipment at all. And if the very first person to photograph an eclipse wishes that he had a chance to see one with just his eyes and not messing around with a camera, then let's take that as a lesson learned.
That's a great story. I'm also working with the CATE program, the CATE Citizen Science Program. I'm also working with that right now. And all these kids, they're making sure that they're going to get their data and everything. But we're telling them, once you hit that button, start looking. Because it's supposed to be all automatic now. Once they get focused on the sun, they get it lined up, it's tracking, just hit the button and go.
Yeah. I mean, it's just absolutely true. I mean, so many experiences are just so awe-inspiring. And this eclipse is, in all the travels I've done around the world, nothing compares to seeing a total solar eclipse. But it's the one kind of event that lasts for such an incredibly short time that to waste even a second of it, seeing it through a viewfinder or on a screen, or to waste any time looking down at a camera, no, just don't do that to yourself. Odds are you're not going to, even if you get the best photo, how many times are you going to be looking at that photo versus how many times are you going to be thinking about the memory of what's going on overhead?
One of the other great stories I like, too, is when I was doing research for my book about the Texas solar eclipse, one of the scientists that was very well prepared and had his equipment set up and everything else, he was so in awe of the eclipse, he forgot to take the solar filter off.
I have known several folks to have done that. Yes, that is a common thing.
Yes.
And it tells you a little something about... it tells you something about just how amazing this must be when even scientists who normally have everything planned down and profess to be, you know, unemotional, taking the data, still get moved to distraction by what's going on above them.
Yes. Yes.
One of the first eclipse books I ever read was Sun, Moon, Earth. So I'm curious, you know, when did you decide to write that and take us through the process of writing that book? It's a fantastic book. I recommend it for anyone.
Oh, thank you. So I had already written a book about astronomy in the national parks. And one of the chapters in there was about the upcoming eclipse in 2017. And in particular, I mentioned Grand Teton being such an amazing place to see it. That I thought, you know, there's really a lot of material, a lot more material that I really wanted to get into. I thought, well, let's write a book that expands that one chapter, but into an entire book about the history of eclipses, the way it's affected people, both in terms of ancient history, omens of doom, up through the science that comes from them. And then into the fact that this has moved from a scientific phenomenon to a tourist phenomenon. And I had a sabbatical from my university that I was going to be taking in 2013, 2014. And so I decided, all right, that's where I'm going to do all of the research for this. And so that, in fact, that eclipse in 2013, where I was on this four-masted sailing ship for 3 weeks, that's where a lot of the ideas, I'm laying there on deck as we're sailing with the trade winds from Spain to Barbados, thinking about, all right, what can I write about? And I made so many interviews with my iPhone, recorded interviews with people that were eclipse chasers who'd, like, there was this one woman who had seen every eclipse since she was in her 20s and she was now in her 80s. And when she passed away, she wanted to be cremated and have her daughter scatter her ashes through the next total eclipse to a NASA astronaut who'd actually studied the sun from the space shuttle. I did all these wonderful interviews. And then when I got home, I wound up doing a rafting trip in the Grand Canyon for night sky, dark skies. The very first rapid, my phone got drenched and I lost every interview, every photograph I took on that trip. And I essentially had to rethink the entire book from scratch as a result of this. But it was something that part of the reason for that book, I think really was I didn't want any other 9-year-old kids in 2017 to have the same experience that I did when I was 9 years old back in 1979. I really wanted to try to dispel some of those myths, and just make it clear this is a life-changing phenomenon. Go out there and experience it.
Yeah, I know the Eclipse community is saying no child left inside has been our motto. And I've been trying to preach that and everything else, but there's still several schools here in Texas that are doing the shades drawn, watch it on TV. And it's just, it's disappointing me. You can't nag somebody into changing their mind on this.
Yeah. And the number of folks who still say that there is no time that it's ever safe to look at the sun, that even during totality, you can't take your eclipse glasses off. Hey, that's just wrong. And so, you know, if you were to leave your eclipse glasses on during totality, you won't see a thing.
Don't see anything.
Because it's the sun's no brighter than the full moon at that moment.
Yeah.
But yet everyone is just so worried about lawsuits and liability that, I mean, they'd rather just lock everybody into a closet, during the eclipse.
Yeah. It's. Yeah, all I can do is just try to get the word out. That's what Chris and I are trying to do. Get the word out. Mm-hmm. Yes, during totality, you can take off your glasses.
Yeah.
If you blink, put them back on.
Right. There's such a wide range of independent school districts having differing ways of approaching it. And it's kind of amazing.
I'm happy to say because I got one team involved in camp, they are now having a solar bowl. And they're going to have news media out there and everything. Everybody's going to be safe. It's all going to be well managed. And it's going to be an awesome thing for the whole community. I mean, me getting them involved in this CAPE program and then the publicity they've been able to generate with it. And they're keeping the equipment to start an astronomy club afterwards.
That's wonderful.
That is just awesome, awesome, awesome. And they're going to have just this wonderful, wonderful experience because of this.
Oh, that's incredible.
With clear skies. Yeah. We have to keep praying for clear skies.
Knock on wood. Yeah, it's one of the big things around here is the eclipse is happening for us here in New York right about the time that classes that school would normally be letting out. So it's a very chaotic time when kids aren't in school, they aren't on a bus, maybe they're in a bus, maybe it's in traffic. And so there's been the effort here to get schools to close that day. And most of the school districts within totality, next to totality have done that. But even that, has its problems. Because for instance, that eclipse back in 1979 that I saw, it was midweek. I think it was a Tuesday and yet I was at home for it. So what must have happened is my school must have decided to not have class that day, but my parents had to work. So I was at home alone, and I kind of wonder, you know, if my parents had been there, would they have told me, oh, you know, let's go outside and take a look at this? Maybe. Or maybe if we'd been in school, but we'd had some knowledgeable person come, you know, again, maybe they would have taken us outside. But then again, probably not, because I don't recall ever getting any eclipse glasses for that event or even seeing them. So it's so hard to know what to do. But definitely locking kids indoors and telling them that they'll go instantly blind if they look at the sun is not the right answer.
No, it's not the right answer. But I mean, that's why I'm doing the education. That's why I'm doing this as part. Some of the stuff I'm doing is out of the Eclipse Ambassadors program. And there's a lot of other programs that are like that, that are trying to get things out. And any glasses I still have left after a certain date, they're going somewhere.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I've got a couple hundred glasses here that are being given to folks that are doing outreach to the local communities. Here in Central New York, there's some pretty poor communities around here that we're trying to get glasses out to. So, it's hopefully this is something that everyone will be able to get take part in some way, even if they can't actually get up to the path of totality.
Good.
Well, we do share a similar experience a little bit. My first partial was in 1979, and I was 9 years old, 9 and a half. I have no glasses, but the teacher built a pinhole camera out of a shoebox. So my question, personal one, so when were you born in 69 or 70?
69.
Okay, so the other questions we have are, what was the hardest one you had to get to?
Oh boy, I would say the Faroe Islands eclipse was definitely the hardest. That was the one eclipse that I've traveled to go to that I wasn't part of a work trip or a tour. It was just I decided, all right, I've got to start seeing these. And so it was a lot of flights from Southern California to get there. I managed to find a family that would take me in, and so I stayed with them. And I got there a few days early, and so spent a couple days straight driving all over the islands. The Faroe Islands is this very tiny little collection of islands with some incredibly high, steep, sharp cliffs and mountains. So the trying to find a location that was not going to be in the shadow of a mountain. It's the first time that I'd heard of this guy, Michael Zeiler, who had these amazing maps showing where the light and dark regions would be. And those maps were all over the island. Everybody was poring over them. And I found this one meadow that was through a 2 mile long tunnel to get to. And it was literally perched on this bench on the edge of a cliff down into the ocean.
Wow.
And it's the most beautiful, beautiful place I'd ever seen. I thought, if I can see totality from here, this will be epic. And it rained for like a week straight up until the morning of totality. The skies began to clear. I thought, this is it. I'm going to see it. And then about a minute, maybe a minute and a half before totality, that coldness from the cooling from the moon's shadow suddenly caused clouds to appear in the moist air all around and utterly clouded out. Wow. And I knew because of that tunnel, and it's a one-way tunnel, that I was committed. There was no way I was going to rapidly get to anywhere else. I later found out from somebody that just on the other side of that tunnel, they actually had half of totality clear. Oh. But, you know, there it is. So yeah. It was a long way to go. I lost it at the last few seconds, but I don't regret it.
Yeah. Yes. I had something. You pick your spot. Because when I went to the 2016 and Palu, we were in a nice hotel in Palu. But theoretically, it was supposed to be kind of cloudy on the coast and drier inland. Guess what happened? It was totally clear on the coast and cloudy inland. So we got to see it through the clouds, but it was definitely through the clouds.
And, you know, that's one.
You stick to it.
Exactly. And it's one of the reasons why, with all the forecasts for this eclipse, where I'm going to be, it's only got about a 35% chance of non-cloudy skies. But you never know.
You never know. You might be clear. We might be. This is Texas, so you might be totally clear and we'll be cloudy. In fact, I think last year it shows that the entire path had clear skies, but Texas had like high clouds.
But I've also been to a couple eclipses where that shadow of the moon caused what clouds there were overhead to dissipate. So you never know.
Yeah. Well, Letitia, when you say you saw it through the clouds, what did the corona look like? Did you just have the partial?
I saw the corona. You just really couldn't see the prominences that well. because the corona just causes it comes through the clouds, so you don't really see the prominences. You don't see any of the chromo. If there's any chromo, the corona's a little bit. It's not as sharp. It's not like the pointy one in Australia. Yeah. Australia is the first one I ever saw that was very pointy. But that it's not. You still see the kind of like what we saw in Argentina through the clouds.
Okay. Yeah, but that cloud whisked off. And
it was moving.
And we had 30 seconds of cloud. And I've got Letitia. That's where we met. And so I've got her on a recording going, and there's the cloud.
It was right at totality. Oh, okay, it's coming, it's coming. And there's a cloud.
A cloud.
Oh, no. Yeah, 40-mile-an-hour winds, though. 50-mile-an-hour gust.
Chris ended up with a very, very awesome photo out of that eclipse because during that, what you could see through that cloud was the striations of the shadow bands on the cloud.
Oh.
As well as the double concentric rainbow. A double rainbow, yeah. Concentric rainbow around it. So it ended up a beautiful picture. Wow. It's an awesome, awesome picture.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I think there's only ever been one eclipse I saw, and that was the 2019 eclipse in Chile, where the weather forecast, like 3 days out, 5 days out, was perfectly clear. It was the only eclipse I've ever been to where in those last few days we had zero worry about the weather. And boy, what a delight that was. I'm going to be a nervous wreck here for the next 2 weeks.
I know. I am too. So what are you planning for 2026? Are you going to be leading another tour?
Yep. The same cruise line that we did the Antarctica trip, Oceanwide Expeditions. They're partnering with Bedchart again, and they're going to do a Greenland Fjords cruise. So we'll sail from Svalbard to Greenland into the Scoresby Sound fjord system and then down to Iceland. And so there's polar bears in Svalbard, and then you get to Greenland and be in the world's largest glacial fjord to see this eclipse. And I've already checked the maps. Yeah, even within the fjord, we'll have a great view of the eclipse. And then get down to Iceland. And maybe on that last night, there's like 4 hours of quasi-darkness. So who knows? Maybe there'll be aurora.
That'll be great. That sounds like an awesome, awesome tour. I looked at going into Greenland, but unless I'm a paid speaker on it, I can't afford it.
I'll admit, I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that I'm working my way on these trips by being the trip leader, I probably wouldn't be able to afford these either. So, when folks talk about eclipse chasing and getting into totality, you do have to remember and remind folks, not everybody has the ability to do this. And so, get yourself to totality. But if you can't, do what you can to at least get outside.
Yeah. And then 2027?
They've asked me to go to the Nile. So, I don't know to what extent listeners out there are aware of this, but the 2027 eclipse goes right over the Straits of Gibraltar, across North Africa, and right over the Temple of Luxor on the Nile. And its totality is going to last for 6.5 minutes, and the sun is going to be virtually at the zenith. So I just imagine standing in an Egyptian temple looking straight overhead and having that corona streaming out in all directions from a black hole directly above you. Yeah. That is going to be stunning.
Well, I have a question about that. Do you lay down on the ground for that one since the sun will be so high in the sky?
That's a great idea. I have no idea where the tour is going to be on that day. If maybe we'd be on a ship on the Nile or in a temple somewhere, but if it's not shoulder to shoulder, I think the idea of laying down and staring up and having, when that moment of totality comes and you take your glasses off to have your entire field of vision just be the sky straight overhead.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And you've got time. You've got the time to get on the ground and then pop up. and yeah, your whole body connected to the earth while looking up and watching that, perfect lineup.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I'm going to say the one nerdy comment here. That'll be my third Saros.
Ooh.
Of that, because that's the same one that was 91, the same one I saw in 2009, and now 2027. So my third Saros.
Oh, fantastic.
I know. I'm so excited.
I realized that the Faroe Islands eclipse, I believe, was the same Saros as the 79 eclipse. So I believe that's still true. Because, yeah, there would be about, let's see, between those 18. Two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe twice that. 36.
2013. Yeah, it's 95.
Yeah, maybe 36. It might have been 36.
79, 95, 13, right?
Okay. So, you know, those are the two eclipses, the first two eclipses. I didn't see either of them, essentially. So, and that, I think the Alaska eclipse of 2033 is part of that same Saros. So, you know, if that all works out, then, you know, I've got one more shot to finally see that Saros, because I believe that might be the last one, because it's only going to be the extreme northern polar area. Yeah.
I think you're right.
The last total of that Saros?
Yes, I think that is, because I think it's on my list. Yeah. After this, I'll check it. But I think that is on my list. That's going to be the one that I'm going to see, one of the two eclipses that I'm going to see if I make it to my dream of seeing 50. That'll be one of the ones that I'll see the last Saros of that run.
Okay. Yeah.
The last total of that Saros.
Saros. Yeah.
Yep.
You know, that is one of the things with eclipse chasing is you look at all of those maps. And you see all those paths across the earth. And at some point, you've got to say, all right, how long do I really think I'm going to live? You know, you begin to confront your own mortality over, all right, which of these should I really still be kind of hoping for and planning for?
I am trying for 50. I'm trying to live to 103.
Excellent.
So we'll see how that goes. Hey, it's a goal. It's a goal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I was telling Letitia, they'll be wheeling her out there with her. I saw the eclipse of 2045 shirt on. It's all worn out and stuff.
Hey, you know, and if you got an eclipse t-shirt from like your first couple eclipses, you know, hold on to those so you can wear them for your 50th. And, you know, you'll have all the cred for having to be hardcore eclipse chaser.
I actually didn't get one for 91. So I'll have to go make one up. Actually, what I want to do is take one of Michael Zeiler's maps of all the eclipses and then put little dots on it of where I've been and then make a dress out of it.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah.
Totality Talks is brought to you by TexasSolarEclipses.com, where you can get the book Texas Solar Eclipses. Learn about solar eclipse safety, the total solar eclipse in Texas of 1878, how technology influences our experience, and citizen eclipse science then and now. That's TexasSolarEclipses.com. Click the link down below.
Any special tips for eclipse veterans?
You know, I've only seen 10 eclipses, so you know, there's so many folks out there that are far more veteran than I am. I kind of hesitate to give any advice, but it's really, you know, go to the places you want to go. Use this as an opportunity to see the world, interact with people. For the 2019 eclipse down in Chile, so many folks went to the Elqui Valley down there and just hung out with other astronomers in observatories or in their own little groups. For the group that I was leading, we went to the next valley down, the Rio Hurtado Valley, that turned out we were utterly alone in terms of eclipse chasers. I think we were the only group down there. We found a local school where we had talked to the schoolmaster, and so he had invited us to bring our group there. And so we spent the eclipse with school kids and their parents, and just had a just an amazing time with the community. And it brought tears to my eyes, especially when I look back on that. So I guess if I had advice, I'd really suggest to veteran eclipse chasers, do what you can to pay this forward. Spend time with the community wherever you happen to be, and really make it a value added experience for everybody.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right, let's get back to your art. So you've done how many do you think you've done just for this eclipse? Because I know you've done some for Rochester.
Right. So for this eclipse, I think I counted them up and I've got 42 that I've done.
Wow.
And I right now on Twitter and Facebook, I'm trying to do like these last 2 weeks, put three a day on there. And I'm starting with the western edge of totality and moving east. But yeah, so I've actually got a whole bunch for Texas. I hadn't realized that. San Antonio, because they were in the at the crossing for both the 23 annular and this one this year. The Frio River. I've got Texas Hill Country, Kerrville, Texas, Dallas Arboretum. Even though I'm not going to be emceeing their event, I did an eclipse poster for them. Yeah, I think, is that it for Texas? Maybe.
You told me a story at the Solar Eclipse Conference about why you don't have an Austin one.
Oh, yeah. So okay, I realized that Austin was going to be soon after South by Southwest. Now, back at the time when I first contacted them, I thought, well, maybe there's some chance that it'll happen at the same time. And I contacted them about this, and essentially they laughed at me, and they were like, Why do we need you? Austin's got lots of artists. We've got we'll do our own poster. Thank you very much. So nothing happened there. But it's been a wonderful experience working with communities all along the path of totality. Places like Buffalo National River up in Arkansas, Hot Springs National Park up there, Ozarks. I've done at least two posters for the Ozarks, another poster for Ozark St. Francis National Forest, Mark Twain National Forest. So then you get along into Southern Illinois, had me do another poster, very similar to the one that they did in 2017. So it's a wonderful sort of bookend. You get these amazing, amazing small little national parks and monuments. Oh, that's right. Another Texas one. The LBJ National Historical Park in Texas. I love that poster. I found a photograph of Johnston in a crowd of people looking up at the sky. Everybody's got this sense of wonder on their face. It was for the Apollo 11 launch.
Oh.
But I took that photograph. I put eclipse glasses on everybody. And I made it look like one of his campaign posters from the 60s, all the way to LBJ National Historical Park for the eclipse. I just love that one.
I'll have to look that one up. I'll have to look that one up. That sounds fantastic.
And that's one of the things I really love to do with when I get these commissions from places is to tie the poster, tie this design to the historical aspect of the place, be it something in like art history, like there's an artistic style, or something that really evokes that feeling. Because what I tell people is that a solar eclipse, it's not just an astronomical phenomenon. If it were, you wouldn't have people chasing them all over the world. It's an emotional experience. And so between my science and art, the art is what brings the emotion into the artwork to help generate interest, to drive people to these places to see it. And so that's my philosophy with the art.
And I think it does. I definitely think it does, because your art, it's the one series out there that I can always point to and say, that's how it feels. You're just in awe.
Oh, thank you. One of the last posters I did was for New York State. I Love New York approached me and asked me if I would do the poster for New York State. And the places this eclipse is going here in New York are the parts of New York that people don't really think about. When you think about New York, you think New York City. But that's the one place in the state that's not in totality. So being able to capture this feeling of I've got Niagara Falls and Buffalo and Rochester in there, but I've also got the Finger Lakes and vineyards and forests and the Erie Canal. And then you get to the Adirondacks and those grand lodges on a lake with the mountains. So I look back at that piece of art, which is now being used along the New York Thruway and at Penn Station in New York City to help generate interest. It was really all about sharing the beauty of this place that normally gets overlooked by the vast majority of people who think about New York, and get them to want to come and spend a weekend falling in love with this part of New York. And on top of that, being absolutely blown away by the beauty overhead. So we'll see if that all works out.
I hope it does. I hope it does, because there the parts of New York that you described, I have friends that live out in that area, and it is beautiful up there. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
So it's been a real pleasure working with the places here in New York on that.
Yeah, I had a great drive one time from Hartford, Connecticut, up to Volney, New York, on Lake Ontario, I believe it was. But incredible, driving through the mountains. I had no idea until you drive through it.
Oh,
how beautiful it is.
Absolutely. I went to graduate school here back in 1991. And prior to coming out here, I'd thought everything, I'd lived in Oregon and Alaska, and I had no idea this part of the country was just so beautiful.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing, is that there are so many amazing towns, locations all across the entire path of totality. And just like in 2017, the eclipse is happening on a Monday. So what a wonderful opportunity to take a 3-day weekend to really visit some places that ordinarily you might not have thought about. Rochester is a gorgeous city. Giant waterfall right in the middle of town. The Ozarks, beautiful mountains, rolling hills, and natural springs and caves and grottos. I just love exploring totality.
I'm just going to make one more recommendation, though, because you said a 3-day weekend. It needs to be a 4-day weekend, because remember, everybody needs to stay after the eclipse because traffic's going to be busy. Stay that extra night and then drive back leisurely.
Exactly. Yep. Absolutely. In 2017, the ranch I was on in Eastern Oregon, I stayed there that Monday night. And when I drove back to Southern California the next morning, I didn't encounter a single car. So it's just, give yourself the luxury of that extra night, and all these traffic jams that everyone's terrifying you with right now won't be an issue.
Yeah. I'm surprised how people skip out immediately after third contact. I mean, it just amazes me that they'll just, okay, totality's over, I'm gone.
My brother-in-law did that drive from Oregon back down to California, and it was bumper to bumper the entire way. He just left. But if he just stayed the extra day, he would have probably got back just as quick and a lot less stressed.
Yeah. But, again, here we come back to we're fortunate to have the luxury of being able to travel to totality and take a couple of days off.
Yeah.
So I do understand some folks can't, but do what you can to, if you have to travel back in the middle of the night, drink lots of coffee. But it's why couldn't we have scheduled this for later in the summer and have it be on a weekend?
I just love the people that call me. Well, can't you delay it?
Yeah. Well, it's a fun drive though, because you're happy, hopefully, and it's the best feeling you can have sitting in traffic.
Oh, my wife and I were just grinning like fools after 2017. That was her first eclipse. She'd never seen one. I'd essentially dragged her all over the country giving eclipse talks. She'd heard my talk more times than she ever wanted to hear. But yet she said afterwards, she said, "You did not oversell that." So that said something.
That is, especially. It's an amazing hobby. Every time I see one, I feel very, very blessed that I can stand there in the path. And yet it's gives me a great sense of humility just because I realize how great the universe is just that I'm even there to begin with.
And you know, that's a fantastic point, because there's a whole body of psychology that's coming out now in which people study the effect of awe on the human spirit. Dr. Kate Russo, mm-hmm. down in Australia, she says that an eclipse, it happens above you and around you and within you. And there's folks at Berkeley, up at the University of Toronto and elsewhere, that say that those who can feel awe become more humble because they're able to feel that humility and know that in that moment they are not the center of the universe. But yet with an eclipse, you are literally in line with the universe. And so, you know, people feel this connection with the people they're with, but also the planet they're on, the moon overhead. So it really is a truly profound experience. And I've been giving talks around the country, talking a lot more about that feeling of awe in addition to the science of an eclipse.
Well, that's one thing I've been really trying to push too, because so much of the news right here, especially here in Texas, safety and traffic. And it's making it almost a scary, like you know, like that first eclipse for you, it was just a scary thing. And I keep trying to say, yes, safety, traffic, awe.
Yeah.
You know, there's this one video I show from YouTube where this kid sees the eclipse and he's just like running around. Oh my God, it's amazing. And I just tell everyone that's what you should expect to feel. And yes, he puts his glasses on at the beginning. He watches the eclipse with them off, and then he runs and puts his glasses on. So it's just perfect little video I show. That's who I want you to be. Joy, awe, amazement, everything else, but safety.
Yep, absolutely. And there was funny thing about taking it back to the book. When I was trying to get publishers interested in this book, this was back in 2016. We just had the transit of Venus a few years before, and publishers were like, "Nah, we're not going to do another astronomy event thing. We got burned on that transit of Venus." And no. It's first of all, a total solar eclipse. Honestly, you don't need to know the first thing at all about science to totally be amazed by this thing. And secondly, even if you do read up on science and you love science, it's not like you need to have a trained astronomer there at your shoulder with a telescope. No, just go out. You can see it for yourself. And unlike, you know, the transit of Venus, which was really cool and had a neat history to it, you don't need somebody to explain to you what that little black dot is. No, there's going to be no question about what's happening overhead. It is night and day different. And you're right. In addition to that, we now focus so much on all the dangers that, good heavens, how many barriers do we actually have to put up in life over something that has the power to change lives?
Yes, I know. It's I think Austin's declaring a state of emergency.
Yeah.
I know.
You know, I interviewed Oregon State Park Rangers after the 2017 eclipse. And to ask them, okay, what was it like? And they said, it was lovely. The eclipse chasers were friendly and mellow, and everyone was just happy. And it was so much better than your typical 4th of July up there in the parks. So honestly, I think this is going to be a non-event in terms of terror and heartache and drama. There's going to be some traffic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some traffic. Yeah, I know.
It's the friendliest people you can meet, and everybody's happy. And,
eclipse,
you know, that
bliss.
Gets me emotional right there. Just thinking about the joy that spread amongst all the people.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, they couldn't find a happier group of people than people going to eclipse.
Hopefully the eclipse bliss will spread. Sadly, it doesn't happen often enough, but
And there's a difference between, say, a giant football game, because in a football game, at least some members of that crowd are going to be really upset because their folks lost.
Yeah.
All right. If you're out there and you got clear sky under totality, everybody's going to be happy. Everybody won.
Well, when I saw my first one, my thought was, well, God just scored a touchdown.
And you can tell you're from Texas. Yeah. That thought there says you're from Texas.
Had to frame it in football. Yeah. I would like to ask, have you done posters that include the Aurora? And also, have you done a book that has all of your posters in it, like a coffee table book or anything like that?
So the one, I've done two posters that feature the Aurora. One is for Denali National Park, and the other one is for Voyageurs National Park up in Minnesota. I'd love to do a coffee table book. I really would. You know, these posters all got their start in my very first book, Stars Above, Earth Below, A Guide to Astronomy in the National Parks. And it was simply because I needed some illustrations. I was a poor faculty member, couldn't pay to get an illustrator. And so I thought, oh, let me try drawing this myself. And I wanted to create something in the style of that See America posters from the 1930s. And so I did like four posters in that book. And little did I know that See America, Half the Park is After Dark illustration was going to be the most popular thing that came out of the book. The book was well received, but that poster was amazing. Park rangers loved it, and an entire career came out of that. So I mean, it was so successful, I decided to give up tenure and retire from my faculty job so I could be a full-time artist. I mean, who does that? That's stupid.
That's awesome. But you capture that so well, because I went to Fort Davis and stayed there, and that's one of the CC, one of those
Civilian Conservation Corps.
Yeah.
Or Works Progress Administration. Those WPA.
WPA was the WPA, and then they had the posters from that time there, and that your style just matches it so well. You did such a great job, just bringing that style forward.
And part of it is, since I got my start working with national parks, so many national parks were associated in people's minds with those old 1930s WPA, Works Progress Administration posters. And if you think about it, the purpose of those posters was the federal government was trying to, first of all, help artists stay afloat during the Depression, but also to help educate the public, use art to educate and inform. Mm-hmm. And, well, that's what I want to do. And so it was a natural style for me to start with. And I think that the first really big, actually the first total solar eclipse poster I did for a park was for Grand Tetons. And yeah, it's completely in that style. Folks there loved it. I think it's still one of my most popular ones. And it really got me started on this whole business. And eventually the Smithsonian collected those posters. So it's just, you know, When I was a young grad student in astronomy, I never would have imagined I'd eventually wind up in the Air and Space Museum for art. But they're there somewhere in their permanent collection, probably in a drawer somewhere in some subterranean vault. But I'm the Smithsonian.
And I'm sure they're going to pull it out for 2045.
I hope so. Wouldn't that be neat?
That would be awesome. Just pull out that whole collection for 2045.
Something about that 2045 eclipse, it's going to go over some amazing places like Arches National Park in Moab.
Oh.
But it also goes right over Disney World.
I didn't realize that.
Yes. Can you imagine what it would be like to be in the Magic Kingdom and see totality over the castle?
Oh, my gosh. We need to book that now.
Before they raise the prices of tickets.
Oh, bucket. I know, but I want to be here in 2045.
There we go. Let's eat your Wheaties, get your exercise, live a healthy life so that we're still traveling in 2045.
I'm doing yoga. I'm going to get trained up to be a yoga instructor and start teaching yoga on a regular basis so I can live to be 103.
There you go.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation, and love your work, and it's just great to hear the stories behind your art.
You've got so much great art.
Thank you. Well, I'm lucky to be able to do this, and it's something I love doing. And this will probably be the last eclipse that I do a lot of this, at least for commissions, because everything's going to be international after this, at least until the Alaska eclipse. And at that point, I draw a poster for every eclipse I go to. It's the thing I do for myself at this point. So come with me on one of my trips or come to the same country and I'll share my eclipse poster with you.
I think I might try for the Aurora, one of your Aurora trips, because that's one of the ones I haven't really knocked out yet, is the Aurora trip.
The Aurora is that's another one of those truly awe-inspiring events. If you're lucky enough to get, a full-on all-sky display, it's the closest thing I've seen to something like the experience of a total eclipse.
And you should be getting really good Aurora trips right now because we're still at solar max.
Yes, as a matter of fact, if you were on the Asian side of the Earth yesterday, there was an incredible set of aurora that should have been visible over there because we just got hit with the coronal mass ejection yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's this is going to be, I think this is going to be a good year. And hopefully that Antarctica Southern Lights trip, Aurora Australis trip next March, hopefully it'll still be going in time for that trip.
That'll be nice. That corona mass ejection was the one you texted me yesterday, wasn't it, Chris?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I had the Space Weather Live app, and I was like, "Oh wow! If we saw totality today, that would have been crazy.
That would have been
huge loop coming out."
Exactly.
We have an active sun right now. So.
Very active sun.
So once again, so many reasons to cross our fingers for two weeks from today.
Clear skies. This is Texas. We're Bible Belt. We're praying.
Very good. I'm knocking on wood. I'm doing all those good sort of northern pagan things that one's supposed to do.
Okay.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. It's been a great chat.
Yes, and thank you.
I know you're super busy and running around planning your event and all that. So,
well, I mean, hey, thank you for all that you're doing as well. And we all have a well-deserved rest that we will get in 15 days. Yep. We all breathe a sigh of relief.
Relief, yeah. And then start planning for the next one. Start making the calls.
There you go. I honestly, after the 2017 eclipse, when I finally got home, I realized that the day of the eclipse, I'd gotten hundreds of eclipse poster orders through my website. And I think I literally spent a month rolling up posters and putting them into tubes and taking them to the mail. So, yeah, maybe I won't be able to breathe a sigh of relief on Tuesday the 9th. We'll have to see what comes through my website then.
Well, good luck with it. I'm glad you've been able to turn a hobby into a business. That is awesome.
It has utterly made my quality of life just absolutely skyrocket. I love being a professor. I love teaching, but I feel my classroom has gotten so much larger, and the ways in which I can help educate folks have gotten so much broader. So I'm really, really very excited about this.
I love the way you phrase that.
Yeah, that makes you an ikigai.
Yeah, an ikigai. We got that term from Kate Russo.
Really?
Yeah, she brought up ikigai on one of our podcasts, and then we talked to Rick Feinberg, who to me is one of the ikigais, and you're one of the ikigais. You're doing what you love. You're making money at it. You're doing great for the world. Like you said, I love the way you phrased it just now. You've turned your art and your hobby, your passion, into a bigger classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you're very ikigai.
I had never heard that before. I will have to, add that to my repertoire. Oh, thank you.
Yes. It's like a matrix.
Yeah, it's a little matrix. You know, what you're good at, what somebody's willing to pay for you,
yes.
And everything else, and then you're slotting right in there.
Yeah.
I've been very fortunate in life. It's one of the things where I tell kids about what I do, and if they were to ever ask how could they do it themselves, I would not have a clue how to go about reproducing all the various strange twists and turns and left turns and things I've done in my life. So I'm lucky to be here.
Yeah, well, I think some of it is the fact that you have pursued what you loved. You loved astronomy. You love teaching. You've been pursuing that, and this is just built on top of that. From what I've heard, know of your life.
Yeah, a product of a liberal arts education, but you know, you make a good point. Never let an interest fall away because you think that you don't know how to pursue it or make something of it. I never would have imagined that my interest in drawing as a kid would have led to a career. So, hey, take that as a lesson learned. Don't ever let any hobby fall away.
That's it for this episode of Totality Talks. Hope you found our chat with Tyler enjoyable and order one of his great posters for the Eclipse event in your area. Check the links in the show notes to access his incredible work. In our next episode, we'll be talking to people that were inside the path of totality for the total solar eclipse of April the 8th. Look for a bonus episode here within 48 hours as we will have last-minute tips to help you plan for Eclipse Day. As always, clear skies.